There's a small town east of the Cascades where cops are fighting an unusual invader.
It looks like the sky is black with birds. You know, we're in a rural area. We're surrounded by farmland and quite a few dairies and feedlots. And every evening, about 4:30 or so, we have up to about 10,000 crows that come into the city and roost within our downtown core.
That's Sunnyside, Washington's police department's commander, Scott Bailey. For more than 10 years, he and other concerned citizens in Sunnyside have been engaging in some ground tactics to try to get rid of their crow invasion. Then they used shotguns with real bullets. Now, Commander Bailey and his team use shotgun poppers, whistlers, and bird bombs, little exploding devices meant to scare the crows away.
You know, crows are some of the smartest animals there are. You know, they're tenacious. So it's working. We're harassing them. We're moving them around. And, you know, it'll take some time, but there is hope at the end of the line.
And Sunnyside, Washington is not the only place with this plague of crows. John Marzloff is a world-renowned crow expert and professor of forest sciences at the University of Washington. He told KUOW's Jeannie Yandel that urban crows are kind of the norm now.
It's really the typical thing this day. As urban areas increase in area and come to be closer to rural lands, the crows come into town to spend the night. Safer, warmer, and convenient for them to do so.
Why is it safer, warmer, and convenient for them to do so? Where are they coming from?
Well, they're primarily foraging out in the agricultural fields on insects that are there and leftover agricultural products, grains and fruits and things like that. Some of them are also eating garbage and other refuse in town. It's warmer in the city than in the country because of the urban heat island effect that humans produce by our industry. It's also safer there often because it's lighter and there aren't as many predators, although that's changing quite a bit now with owls and Cooper's hawks increasing in urban areas as well. And then it's convenient because it's a central location where many crows can gather. They have strength in numbers. And so by having a large group in a central area, they can fan out to many different feeding spots during the day.
What's happening to crows' usual habitats? They're coming from somewhere.
Well, their usual habitat is exactly what we've made. Their usual habitat are farm and woodland farm interfaces and urban woodland interfaces. What they don't like are either completely wide open places like sagebrush and the steppe area that would have been around Sunnyside, or the forested areas that are dense forests like we have on the western side of Washington.
I'm talking with John Marzloff. He's a crow expert and a professor of forest sciences at the University of Washington. He's helping us understand the crow invasion in Sunnyside, Washington, and in other places as well. As you said, this isn't unusual.
Right.
So even though this isn't an unusual thing, we just heard from the commander of Sunnyside's police force that a crow invasion can be pretty disruptive. What harm can crows cause?
Well, they can be a nuisance to some people. I would say, first off, that they do cause harm, but that's in the eye of the beholder. And a lot of people actually think it's great. They think it's a very awesome natural spectacle to see the crows come into roost. But if you're a landowner that happens to live right where the crows are roosting, they're noisy. They do defecate a lot, which can cause damage to structures just by the acidic and basic nature of their droppings. And it's distracting as well.
How likely is it that crows can bring disease or illness with them when they come into these urban areas?
There are some, not really diseases as much as they're transporting some pathogens from rural areas into the city. That's a possibility. It's one that's being investigated. It's been investigated a little bit here in Seattle and also in the eastern part of the U.S. And there are lots of antibiotic-resistant bacteria and things that are in our farmlands because of our practices there. And any of the birds that utilize those areas, crows included, tend to move those pathogens around more.
So, for people, for communities for whom crow invasions are not wanted, they're not aesthetically pleasing, they're messy, all of those things you said, what kinds of solutions are available?
Well, it's a complex problem. As the chief said, these are smart birds, so we can use that to our advantage. We can move them around as they're doing there to keep them out of places where we really find it intolerable to have them. That's a great strategy. You can also use raptors to do that, as has been done in other cities around, including Indianapolis, Indiana. And that's another strategy that just shows the crows that this is a dangerous, unsafe place. So you take away that advantage they have of coming there. But it's a complicated question because of where do they go when you move them? They don't just leave. The population doesn't disperse or decline. They move to someplace else. And that's the big question is where are you going to move them to?
You talked about cities like Indianapolis using raptors to manage crow populations. I'm imagining hawks swooping down on crows. You're nodding. Is this how that works?
Yes. You get falconers. Actually, the area around Sunnyside uses them in the orchards there to keep starlings and other birds out of the orchards. And falconers will come in with their hawks and falcons and let them fly at the birds as they're coming into roost. And just the sight of those birds sends fear into the crows and also just illustrates to them, this is a dangerous place. It's a risky place to come.
The strategies you're talking about, though, they require coordination. They require budget. Are these strategies available to every community that have issues with crows?
Well, I don't know that they are. The situations I know where they're used most effectively, it costs a lot of money, tens of thousands of dollars for the winter to do that. Some places that cost is offset by the cost of not having to clean up after the birds. The question, though, is really even within the city, if they move them from one place, say the downtown core, to another neighborhood where they're going to settle because there are trees and safety and all those other conveniences, that could pose another burden, an ecological burden on the people that live there. And those people either may not have the coordination or the funds to be able to move the crows from their spot. So really, it's what we call a environmental injustice, where we move one environmental problem from a rich area to a poor area. We've displaced a problem. And the main reason we've displaced it is because we haven't provided in our cities large open areas, treed, open, safe places for birds like crows to spend the night.
You painted a pretty clear picture of what might happen to crow populations. One community can use strategies to get them to move. They might end up in another neighborhood. And hopefully the people who live in that neighborhood are okay with having crows there.
Right.
But what does that tell you about how people and crows or other animals have to share space, have to live together?
Well, that's a great point. And this is certainly a problem that we've lived with for quite a while as humans and will continue to and even experience, I think, to a greater degree. This sort of reduction of wild habitat for many animals or the creation of novel habitats like cities that a lot of animals thrive in. And then they come to live very close with us. They depend on us. They utilize us. They exploit us, really. And then the question is, what do we do? Some people get upset about that. And it's a pendulum that swings. And unfortunately, the animals are usually the losers in this particular case. And what it really requires is a broader thinking about how we fit into this ecosystem. This is an ecosystem that we live in, the urban ecosystem, and it includes things like big communal roosts of crows. And I think the best strategy is to understand and enjoy that and wonder about it and not just continually fight it.
One of the things that we heard the police commander from Sunnyside say is that they used to shoot crows with real bullets. They used to kill them. That is a strategy for dealing with crow invasions, but probably not one that everybody wants to take. But if we were to lose crows, what would we be losing? How important are they to our ecosystem?
Well, they're a very important nutrient recycler in our environment. They are a decomposer. They eat dying things and dead things. They move seeds around that have to be germinated, what we call an ecosystem service. So they're very important in that role. They're also culturally extremely important to humans, and they've influenced our evolution since the day we stepped off of the plains in Africa. And they have influenced our language, our thought, our beliefs, our customs. And to lose an animal that's so powerful to us would surely be a sin.
That's John Marsleff, professor of forestry at the University of Washington, speaking to KUOW's Jeannie Yandel. Marsleff's new book is called Suburdia, Sharing Our Neighborhoods with Wrens, Robins, Woodpeckers, and Other Wildlife. This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.